Radio.
An extra £1.4 billion of funding has been announced to help children in England catch up on mislearning because of the pandemic. Pupils will be offered up to 100 million hours of tuition under the scheme, although the announcement doesn't include plans to lengthen the school day. The Education Secretary was speaking on BBC Breakfast.
I see the benefits directly, and I think it's really important that we do the work to make the case to see how we can do that. And there's already many schools right across the country that deliver an expanded school day.
Following a successful pilot scheme, paramedics are going to be fitted with body cameras. NHS data reveals that 3,600 ambulance workers have been assaulted in the last year. The UK is on the brink of achieving a milestone, having three quarters of adults have their first dose of the jab. New data shows just under 40 million people have had one dose, and Chris Hemsworth has revealed that filming's wrapped on superhero movie Thor: Love and Thunder. It's set for release next May. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Olivia Mouncer.
Moving to a remote Amazonian village to live off the land is one change you could make to live more sustainably. Swapping your shower head for a water-saving one is another change you could make to live more sustainably. One's hard, one's not so hard, but both help. Change a bit for good. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Colourful.
Coming up next, Sonia Polian on Colourful Radio.
Were you persuaded to buy solar panels with assurances they would pay for themselves or even make you money? If those promises haven't come true and you bought your panels in the past 6 years with a loan from Barclays, Shawbrook, Creation or Ecano, then you may be entitled to thousands of pounds in compensation. At Solar Claims UK, many of our clients receive their settlement within 4 weeks. So text SOLAR to 60777. Text SOLAR to 60777 now. You don't need a claims management company to make a claim, and if unsuccessful, you can refer it free to the Financial Ombudsman.
I'm Moses Zukusoka. We've had a lot of people from my black African community who've passed on of COVID. My sister Irina Zukusoka passed away, tragically, in the same house that I shared and lived with her with my two young boys. Irina dying was a complete shock. It's been difficult. I took my first dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine because I want to protect my life, I want to protect my children and my community.
For more information, search Vaccine Facts.
Live on digital radio, colorfulradio.com and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
If you don't
we go further? Tell me now, I wanna know. They cannot go fall down low. I wanna know.
They cannot fall down low.
Do you have another? Oh, I wanna know. Am I the only one? Am I your number one? If you don't love me, make it not come see me. If you don't need me, no more, no more than me. I take this love more seriously, yo. Baby, you're making no play me. Nobody talk, say you love me, ho. If you don't love me, ho.
Nobody talk, say you love me, ho.
If you don't need me, ho.
Nobody talk, say you need me, ho.
I take this love more seriously, yo. You know, if you need, you know, finish me, yo.
Nobody talk, say you need me, yo.
No play.
Colorful,
colorful.
Sonia Polian on Colorful Radio.
Right, guys, this part of the show is called Ordinary People, and as always, I've got somebody who's doing extraordinary things in the community. And today, I'm so excited to bring my guest to you. I know I'm always excited, but this one here, she matches my energy, you know, she matches my energy, and that is important. So I'll just tell you a little bit about her. Her name is Naomi Inspires. So Naomi, born to Ghanaian and Grenadian parents, Naomi Empowers graduated at the top of her class with an MBA. She is an author, a lecturer, a business consultant, and a transformational coach who works with aspiring entrepreneurs. She's passionate about finding creative solutions to small business owners, helping them to master their mindset, level up, and get unstuck. So this is your girl, Naomi. Welcome to the show, girlfriend.
Thank you so, so much for having me. Thank you.
How does it feel being on the other end of the seat?
Gosh.
Because I know that you always interview people. So how's it feel being in the hot seat now?
Well, you know what? I had a bit of a baptism of fire the other day when I was interviewed on my own show, funnily enough. By my dear friend, Paul. He is absolutely amazing. Crazy, crazy guy, but I love him to pieces. Okay. And so I think after that baptism of fire,
yeah,
I'm getting used to it. It's still a little bit odd, but I'm getting used to it.
Well, I did watch that, but I wasn't, I haven't watched all of it, right? Yeah, but I thought it's a bit strange. I thought, oh, because usually you're interviewing the people. And I thought, it looks like he's interviewing her. Well, you were in preparation, babes, for this.
Clearly was. It was, you know, a number of people had requested, they want to hear my side of the story. They want to hear what's happening in my world. So I reluctantly agreed, and Paul was the best person to do the job.
Well, we'll see if Paul was the best person or I'm the best person. Right, Paul, you've got competition around here, I tell you. No, tell us a little bit about Naomi. So I know that you were born to, is it Laura and Emmanuel?
Ooh, you've definitely done your research.
I thought I'd just drop that in, a little bit of nugget there.
Wasn't expecting that. Yes, that's my dear mother, my dear father, yes.
They're so sweet. They need you. Not really. Okay, so tell us a little bit about Naomi. I know you are one of three, but my listeners, your listeners know, but my listeners don't. So please tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, cool. Gosh, whenever anyone asks me to tell them about myself, sometimes I struggle because I wear lots of different hats.
Okay, all right. Let me just break it down for you, make it easier. Okay, tell us who Naomi is, where she comes from, and her family composition.
Okie doke. So I am big sister. So I am the eldest. I'm number one of three. I was the accident. I was the accident.
And the rest were planned, were they?
Well, I think so.
Actually, that's how it usually goes anyway. The first one's an accident. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I've got no issues about that at all. Yeah. You know, I'm number one of three. My mum only had girls. She so desperately wanted a boy, but she refused to try again in case she got another girl. So it ended with my younger sister, Leah. We grew up in West London. As my mum is from the beautiful island of Grenada, and my dad is from the land of gold. He's from Ghana. And, you know, we had a pretty cool childhood. We had good fun, lots of family holidays, and things were good. We went to a private school that my mum started, actually. My mum started a private school in West London back in 1995.
What did your mum, was she a teacher?
She was. Yeah, she was a teacher. She was also a lecturer. And now she's a multi-award-winning head teacher. So my parents, they make me very, very proud, and they give us much to live up to.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. With parents like that, you know, you have to step up to the plate. But I think I heard you said something on your interview with Paul that one of your sisters is kind of like the maverick, let's say the maverick. That wasn't your words. I can't remember what your words was, but so what does she do? What do your sisters do?
So, okay. So as I'm sure you can appreciate, in a traditional African home, there are only certain occupations that you dare go into, right? They want the doctor. They want a lawyer. They want an engineer, an accountant. And I think my parents haven't done too bad with that. So my second sister, Danielle, she is on her way to becoming a medical doctor. And my baby sister, she's not quite a baby, but the baby sister is on her way to becoming a barrister. And then you've got me, the entrepreneur. So my parents, they're kind of proud. They're all right.
So also, when Paul was interviewing you, I heard him touch on, you know, big sister syndrome, okay? And he was missing some vital components to be the big sister. So, Paul, if you're listening to this, right, you need to know that big sisters are bullies.
This is absolutely not true, Sonny. I can't believe
they're bullies, right? And they also think they are the mother. They mother everybody.
Yes. That, and you know what? I will hold my hands up to that 100%. That is the truth. So, Sonia, look, I was told that when mom and dad are not around, Naomi, you are in charge. Mm-hmm. And so I was always looking after my baby sisters. I keep calling them baby. They're not babies. I was always looking after my younger sisters. And that's something that's carried on. Yeah. I mother everyone. So that's even turned out, even in some of the professions that I've been in, it's always been in a quite a motherly, organizer, bossy boots type of role. It's just,
there you go. Clearly bossy boots, bully. No, but that's nice, and at least you recognize that. So your parents are pastors. She's a PK, everybody. Oh, she's a PK.
Yes, I was born into it. Yes.
as a pastor's kid, PK. Do you call them PK in the SDA?
Yes.
Okay. Right. So what kind of things did you come against? Because, you know, it's always the pastor's kids who get to do this and get to do that. But I know in the SDA, things are a little bit different as to us Pentecostals.
Well, first of all, I hated being a PK. Mm-hmm. Absolutely hated it. We so desperately wanted to just be seen as normal, because that's just what we were. We were normal children. There could be 10 children running wild through church, like we're not supposed to be.
You're not allowed to.
And if 10 of us were, let my sisters or I, let us be among that number, we would be the ones that would be called out. And supposedly, we should know better. Even if their children were running too, we should know better, because our dad is the pastor. And oh goodness, it used to really frustrate me as a child. And you know, they would often want to push us up to the front, and to, you know, my mum would, oh gosh, this is another thing. I remember my sisters used to cry about this. They used to force us to sing together in church as well.
You must be good singers then.
Well, you know what? I spent about 10 years singing professionally from the age of 16 or so. But I gave up the, you know, that sort of career once I had baby number one. I didn't want to be a mum on tour. Yeah. I wanted to be able to be at home and present for my children, okay, for my daughter.
Can I just ask you this?
Go ahead.
When you had your first child, mm-hmm, were you in wedlock?
Ooh, no, no. Listen, I am not
You're going to hell, baby. You're going to hell. You should know better.
Sure, tell me. Listen, yeah. I am not the poster girl for Adventism. Yeah. I am, in fact, probably the polar opposite, the exact opposite of what they would expect is what I was. And so, no, I was not married when baby number one came along. I then subsequently was engaged when baby number two came along, but we didn't quite make it over the line. So I had two babies out of wedlock. And you know something? I expected a lot of backlash. I expected a lot of people having things to say to and about me. They probably still said things about me, but no one said anything to me. I think by them they realized that my tongue was pretty sharp, and if they gave me anything, I'm going to give it to them right back. So so no, I didn't do it the Adventist way. I did have my babies out of wedlock.
How did your parents feel, what, you know, the day when you came home and said, you know, mom, dad, I'm gonna give you your first grandchild? What did they have to say?
Well, first of all, I didn't come home and tell them anything of the sort. It didn't go down like that.
Oh, you just came home with your baby, did you?
Oh, listen, let me tell you exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I had traveled. I was with music, I was doing a lot of traveling. I traveled. I found out the night before I was getting on a flight to LA that I was pregnant. Thank God it was the night before I was getting out of the country. And so I sent an email.
Oh Lord. Yeah.
I sent an email. And that was, yeah, that was the best. I couldn't articulate it. I couldn't say the words, I am pregnant. So I figured the best thing to do would be to send an email. Honestly, I was terrified because I didn't know what they were going to do. Like, I knew they weren't going to throw me out. I knew they weren't going to beat me, punish me, but I didn't know what they were going to do. And that is what was terrifying about it. And honestly, if you saw the email that I wrote, it was overly verbose. I was so apologetic. And you know what? My dad, I will never forget my dad's response.
Yeah.
He basically asked, why are you writing like this? We are not at war.
Aww.
And the love those two showed me,
it was
just out of this world. I felt I'd really disappointed them, let them down, but I didn't get that from them at all. I really didn't.
You know what? I think the mere fact that you wrote it down, right? Then, and also because you were going away, I think that gave them an opportunity to really, really think about it. They couldn't speak to you because you was on an 11-hour flight.
Yeah.
You know, so they had time to think about it.
Yeah,
so that's probably went in your favor as well. You know, the Lord was looking down on you, babe. The Lord was looking down on you.
And you know what? It was perfect in terms of the timing.
Yeah.
So when I was flying out of the country, I let them know.
Yeah.
Then by the time I was coming back into the country, my dad was flying out of the country, so I had a bit more time without having to face him.
How old were you at the time?
I must have been 25.
Okay, so you...
No, I was 20. I was 24 or 25.
Okay, so you were still, you know, like, you weren't 16, 17, were you?
No.
And by then, you know, you'd already left school. And you had a job, I assume.
I was doing music. I was doing music full time. Okay. So I was...
When you were at school, what did you aspire to be?
When I was at school, I didn't know what I aspired to be. Yeah. I didn't know... So what I do now, I didn't know it existed back then.
Mm-hmm.
I had lots of skills and talents in various areas. And as a result of that, I found it difficult to choose one path. And I was always told I have to choose one path.
Yeah.
But that was the most difficult thing for me because it just didn't fit. Yeah. I didn't feel like I completely fit in anywhere. Yeah. And so I just went along with what other people said I should do. Mm-hmm. They said that smart people should become doctors. So I pursued that path, even though I did not want to be a doctor.
Yeah. So I heard that you were good at maths, science, this, that, physics, and all those mathematical subjects there. Do you want to just list them out for us?
Well, let's just get this in perspective. I can't say I was good. to be honest, my real strengths were definitely in English, mm-hmm. Humanities, languages. I did, you know, I think I got an A star in French. Mm-hmm.
Can you speak French?
Oh no, no, it's gone. It's gone. It's absolutely gone. It's absolutely gone. I haven't used that in years. Uh-huh. But I was able to do that. You know, I was, in terms of academics, it came naturally to me. I was the person everyone hated in school. Uh-huh. I was the person who wouldn't study, who would mess about the whole year. And then when it came to exams, I would get top grades.
Is it? You're like, yeah, that's for me. I tell you.
Really?
Yeah. People like you, I want to put my hand around my throat and strap it. It's people like me. We have to study and study and study and study. Yeah. So you get the concept and you could just fly with it. That's good though, you know.
Yeah, it was a gift and a curse. Mm. Because I think it gave me a lot of bad habits, which I then carried on into later life.
Yeah.
So for example, I completed my GCSEs a year early. So I left school in year 10, having 10 GCSEs, A star to C. Mm. And because I was ahead, and I knew I was ahead.
But this is the accident, yeah? The accident has left school. Yeah. 10 GCSEs. Couldn't get any better than that, could it, Laura and Emmanuel?
Oh, it went downhill quickly from there. When I went to college, I knew I was a year ahead.
Yeah.
I messed about. I had the time of my life in college. I didn't take anything seriously. I just about went to college. Mm-hmm. And eventually I had to end up doing the year again because I just messed about. I didn't do anything. I literally messed about. But yeah, it was. It's been quite a journey.
Yeah. So you got pregnant.
Yep.
You had. Is it Aaron?
No, I had Rianne. I had my daughter first.
Oh,
so
okay.
Baby.
What's
so Rianne.
Rianne. Okay.
Yeah.
And then your parents brought you back into the fold. And then you went and done it again.
Yeah, I did it again. The reception wasn't as warm the second time. I'll tell you that.
Go on, tell us about that reception then.
They didn't tell me off, or they just weren't impressed. And you know, when their face just says, and my mum told me, if I dare do it a third time, she's leaving the country. So she's going back to Grenada.
Right. So you decided that you were going to buckle down after that then, yeah?
Yeah, time to behave. But to be honest, things had fallen apart so badly. You know, with my children's dad and I, by that point, there was no chance of baby number three mysteriously or miraculously appearing.
So what kind of things happened in the relationship that made it go bad?
So I think things were going bad, to be honest, from baby number one. When I was pregnant, I want to say maybe 5 or 6 months or so, maybe a little bit earlier, he got arrested. Mm-hmm. He got arrested and he was incarcerated. Mm-hmm. I brought my baby girl to meet her dad in prison, mm-hmm. For the first time. Mm-hmm. And that was really rough. That was a really, really rough time, mm-hmm. for me. My emotions, you know, hormones and everything all over the place. Mm-hmm. It was a real challenge. And I think naively, I had this idea that once he came out, we would just be able to kind of pick up where we left off and just go and be a happy family. Mm-hmm. You know, he was my first love. Yes. And so I had a really, I don't know, I had romanticized the idea of what would happen between us. And, mm-hmm. It couldn't have been further from reality.
Yeah.
And I say naively because what I didn't take into consideration or I didn't think about was the fact that he was also traumatized by the experience that he had gone through. Mm-hmm. Because by that point, mm-hmm. he was actually incarcerated for something on that occasion that he didn't do.
Oh, wow.
He was actually in, it was ridiculous. It was the most ridiculous thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into too much details, but you know, he was driving a vehicle mm-hmm. that was hired in his own name with mm-hmm. his own details. Yeah. The company couldn't get hold of him, assumed that he had stolen the car, reported it stolen, and yeah. that was the end of it. Yeah. So when the solicitor called me to discuss what had happened, I'm like, oh, guys, come on. You really think in his own name, mm-hmm. with his own bank card, he is going to steal a 1 liter vehicle? Mm-hmm. Come on. But that's what it was. Yeah. And so things deteriorated quite quickly from that point. Mm-hmm. You know, I can say it now. I didn't view it at the time, but I was most definitely... I was the victim of emotional abuse.
Yeah.
And he was also a victim as well.
He had pent up anger because he was locked up for something that could, he obviously kept the car a little bit longer than he should have. And usually what they do, I mean, nowadays, I don't know about then, they just charge it to your card. So he was locked up for something that he didn't really, just wasting taxpayers' money, basically.
Pretty much.
You know? So he was resentful because of that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All pent up. And then you two being together.
It was a mess. Mm-hmm. It was a hot mess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then he's come out of this situation now, come out of, you know, upon release. Now it's about, all right, trying to get a job, trying mm-hmm. to get back into society and doors being closed left, right and center. Mm-hmm. So now financially things are difficult, which is another added pressure for the relationship. I was trying to juggle everything. I've got a brand new baby, trying to keep a roof over our heads, trying to make sure we're still fed, trying to support him. It was awful. I was on the brink of being evicted. It was horrible. It was just too much. It was too much to deal with. And then, you know, because of all the anger and the frustration and the hurt, you know, things got really nasty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember he broke me down.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally, by his words. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have 1,000 people singing your praises, mm-hmm. but if the one person who means more than anything to you mm-hmm. tells you stuff about yourself and it's negative, that voice is internalized. Well, at least that's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. That voice was internalized and it drowned out any other voice of anyone telling me that I was enough, that I was beautiful, that I was valuable. No, I couldn't accept that. What was louder was that I was lazy, that mm-hmm. I wasn't special, mm-hmm. that I was a waste of time, a waste of space, that mm-hmm. I was disgusting, that mm-hmm. I had put on so much weight since having this baby, that no one would ever be able to love me in this state. And mm-hmm. it was horrible.
Yeah. So you started to have low self-esteem.
That's an understatement, Sonia. My self-esteem plummeted. I was a shell of who I am today. When I look back on that girl who I was, Sonia, I can't believe it. No, and I genuinely cannot believe that I got to the point where I had no regard for myself, like that I believed that I was nothing. My self-worth was non-existent. Mm-hmm. And I believed that no one would ever want me, that no one could ever love me. And that what I had, that situation, that toxic situation that I was in, was the best it was ever going to get for me. I genuinely believed it 100%.
That was the power of love.
Yes.
The power of love enables us to give away our power to somebody else and for them to abuse it in the way that he did.
Mm.
So he tore you down mentally.
Yeah.
And I suppose you lost a lot of weight.
Probably not then. Mm. Not at that point.
Oh, so did you eat then?
I think I think I put on weight during that time. I think I needed some form of comfort.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about Killy Willy, isn't it? Over. Is it called Killy Willy?
Kelly Willy.
Kelly Willy.
Yeah, it was it was rough. It was really rough.
What did your parents have to say?
I hid a lot of it from my parents, and I think that's also another part of it. They talk, and do you know what? It's textbook, but when you're in it, you don't realize it, that I was being alienated, like from my people, from my, I didn't, Sonia, honestly, as I'm talking to you about it, I'm thinking, I'm like, Naomi, like, are you mad? Yeah. I don't know how I didn't see it happening to me. I didn't realize, my friends didn't really know what was going on. I started to distance myself from them. I chose not to share too much with my parents because I didn't want them to worry. I didn't want them to dislike him. I didn't want, all I wanted was my happy family back. That's all I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so I was prepared to, you know, in hindsight, I can say this, that I was prepared to sacrifice myself if it meant that I could keep this thing together and have that perfect picture. But it just didn't happen. So my parents didn't really know what was going on. The only time things came to their attention was when baby number two came.
Okay.
When baby number, I remember the day that I went into labor. He was working in London.
Hold on, before you get there, did you have any friends? Like, you must have had a best friend that you'd confide in or anything, or was everything just like kept inside you?
I think I'm still quite like this today. With most of my friends, I am more their friend than they are more my friend. And I think that's a defense mechanism. I think because of some of the things that I have been through, I've got these walls up. I know that I do, and I can own it. And especially then, I think I would be too embarrassed to let people know that this is what I was going through, that this is what I was enduring. So even those who were closest to me were still kind of kept at arm's length so as to... I just couldn't let people in. I couldn't let people know what was happening. So it was a real challenge. But
was he ever physical towards you?
Never. Not
all
once.
Mental abuse.
It was mental, it was verbal. And the thing is, you know, I've said it before, he might as well have been, because the impact of the words, it felt like blows, like it really did. But, you know, not ever did he put his hand on me to hurt me physically in any way.
What kind of things did he say to you? Oh, you just told me, didn't you?
he doesn't want a woman who's size 16, you know, meanwhile, I've just...
When he met you, were you a size 10?
Well, I don't know about a size 10. Definitely not a size 10. I don't know if I've ever been a size 10. But, you know, after I had two children very close together, back to back. It was... And also, whilst he was incarcerated, I feel like I served the sentence with him, because I wouldn't go out, because I would hate for... him to call, and he hears me maybe outside having fun, having a good time. I didn't want that. So I just stayed in the house.
Yeah.
I was just at home, waiting for that one phone call a day. So I wasn't living the healthy
life. Every day?
Absolutely.
He called you every day?
Yeah, mostly. Wow. If not every, you know, when it, if not almost every day at least.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there weren't many days that went by where I wouldn't hear from him.
Okay. Oh, so he was still able to control you then?
Yeah, I guess.
From a distance.
And do you know something? This is the thing about broken people and hurt people. When hurt, and you know they say about hurt people.
Yeah.
It's so true, because you know what? I don't have anything against him. And I think this is even what kept me there for as long as I was, because I understood. I understood that he had a rough childhood, that he had a rough upbringing, and I understood. And because of me understanding, I was more accommodating, and I was therefore more enduring, and I would tolerate a lot more. And so, you know, I look back on it now, and we were just two broken kids, is how I see it, who were just causing and inflicting pain on one another.
Did you meet him in church?
I did. Yes, I did. when we were about 13 or so.
Okay, so you knew him for a long time then?
A very, very long time, yeah.
Were your parents accepting of him then? Because, you know, he was from the kingdom.
Well, no, my dad was never my dad was never keen on the idea, to be honest. Yeah. He wasn't. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you're young, your first love, you don't care what anyone, well, for me, you didn't care what anyone said. Love was enough, and I quickly, well, not quickly, it was a long lesson to realize actually no, love isn't enough. And you know, what's love got to do with it? Indeed, that is the question. But, you know, things I think came to a head when baby number two was on the way.
Yeah.
And he was working in London. He had used my car to get to work. And I called him and said, yeah, baby's definitely on the way. Mm-hmm. And so he came up and I had it all planned out. I was going to have a water birth. Mm-hmm. So they filled up the pool for me, got in the water, contractions, everything stopped. That was the end. So no, the baby was like, no, this water is too relaxing. So we're not doing this. Uh-huh. So they told me to get out and go walk him. Uh-huh. So he said, all right, come, let's go for a walk. Took me for a walk outside the birth center, to my car. And he showed me my car and I was so confused. Mm-hmm. Someone had made an attempt on his life. There were bullet holes in my car, wow, just underneath the window, mm-hmm, a few inches up, and I probably would never have seen or heard from him ever again. That would have been it for him. And now this I'm dealing with whilst I'm in labor, mm-hmm, like.
And he takes you out there purposely to see the bullet holes in the car.
Yeah. It was just too much. And I remember my exact words were, I can't deal with this right now. Mm-hmm. Sorry, can't deal with it right now. And that was the beginning of the most traumatic experience of my entire life.
So what happened after that?
After that, tensions were high. Mm-hmm. By now, this has now traveled around my whole family, that, you know, Naomi's got bullet holes in her car and it's not safe. And so people are worried. Mm-hmm. People are angry with him. And so it caused like big arguments between him and my family members. And my family members were coming to my defense. Yeah. But what they didn't realize is that the more they would attack him, is the worse it got for me at home.
Yeah.
And so when the doors shut and it was just me, you know, I would get the brunt of the anger and the frustration. Mm-hmm. And I've got this new baby who won't stop crying. I've got a little one who's not even 2 years old yet. Mm-hmm. It was too much. I just didn't. I remember he wouldn't take the children in the car to, you know, to his mother's area because that's where this incident took place and it wasn't safe and living in fear.
Why were they trying to shoot him?
I have no idea. I didn't ask. I didn't get into it. I didn't want to. Like when I say I couldn't deal with it, it was. You know, for some people, I understand this sort of way of life might be normal. And might be, for me, this, I had never ever heard of anything like this. Like this I saw on the TV.
On the bill. Yep, on the bill.
This was limit. So I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that.
Hold on a minute. You missed out a vital part.
Go on.
Question. Earlier on, I asked you, when you were younger, what did you aspire to be? You told me some nonsense. You forgot to tell me that you wanted to be a policewoman, all right?
When I was very young, I forgot about that. When I was very young, I used to watch The Bill. I loved that show. Listen, if the reruns are on, I will be there watching them. I did want to be a policewoman. Mm. And that quickly changed. I realized
after your partner had this experience where he was actually incarcerated for a trivial offense, okay, let's say it was trivial, right? Mm. How did you view the police from that point onwards? Because before, you know, you aspire to be one of them, but after that, what happened? What was your mindset about them?
I was quite dubious of the police. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd seen the police manhandle him, and I remember we were, and many times we would be in the car driving and he would be stopped. Well, we would be stopped. Mm-hmm. And I just saw, I don't know, it's just, it felt like as a black man, mm-hmm. and he's a big guy, you know, mm-hmm. he's like, he just felt like a target almost mm-hmm. for the police. And it's almost like we would be sitting in the car outside of his mother's home mm-hmm. and police would pull up alongside. They would take him out the car, asking me, "Miss, are you okay? Is he hurting you? Are you being like?" Mm-hmm. So from before, I didn't have, you know, I didn't hold the police in the highest esteem. Mm-hmm. And it was just literally because of the secondhand experience.
Yeah.
But then with this as well, mm-hmm. it's a difficult one, because I can't say I blame the police for that, because I believe that all... with every action, there's a consequence.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't ever on the police radar in the first place, mm-hmm. then it's likely he would not have been in that situation mm-hmm. where they would be able to get him for such a trivial matter. Yeah. So I can't say that particular experience tainted my view of the police. I think if it were to have happened, it happened a long time before that actually okay. took place. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, so you were saying that outside your mum's house, you couldn't go to his mother's area because that's where the incident had taken place.
Yeah.
He was frustrated, you were frustrated, you had these two young children, and he got, aggressive, angry, more controlling.
He got nasty. I think, you know, I think that his mental health definitely took a hit, because he wasn't the same person. He just wasn't the same person. Like, he was always, always lovely to me, always. Yeah. He treated me like royalty, which is the only reason why I was even with him for as long. But then something changed. It's mm-hmm. like, I don't know, it feels like mentally he snapped. Something changed, and it was awful. Mm-hmm. And because I had opened up my heart to him so willingly,
you was in it for, well, not so willingly, I mean, you knew him for a long time, you know, you had two children, you know, give yourself some credit. But and when you love, you obviously love hard.
Yeah,
you give 100%.
Yeah. So when things started to turn, I just so desperately wanted to save it, and so, which meant now that I would accept the blame for everything. Yeah. Everything I would, okay, I'm so sorry. Mm. I'll do better. That was my approach. Yeah. And again, because I wasn't really...
Did you go around trying to make everything better, like inside the home as you possibly could, because you were fearful that, you know, at some stage, you know, he could just lash out at you?
Well, I was walking on eggshells. That's how it felt. Yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, I never ever feared any physical violence. That was, I can, even up to, I've never ever felt that sort of fear.
But hold on, you just said that you were walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
So there must have been some kind of fear that he was going to hit you.
No, absolutely not. It was a fear that he was just going to be venomous with his tongue. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Because it would hurt me so much, because I would want to say, hold on, but it's me. It's the same girl who has been here since we were 13, 14. Mm-hmm. Why are you saying these things to me? Why are you treating me like this?
How is his relationship with the children?
Now?
No, then.
Then?
Yeah.
Oh, then he was all over the kids.
Yeah. So he still managed to have a good relationship then. He still managed to let he show emotions to his children, that tell them that he loved them?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he done absolutely. Them?
Say that again.
And he did things with them, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Feed them, put them in.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. No problem.
Yeah.
No issue there at all. With him as a dad, I had no problems. No problems whatsoever.
So how long after all that did you decide, well, enough was enough, that I'm assuming you broke the relationship, okay?
No.
Oh, right. Okay. Tell us that bit there.
No. But listen, Sonia, this is what I'm saying. Yeah. By that point, I was at level zero. Mm-hmm. I was at level zero, literally. Mm-hmm. There was nothing left. Mm-hmm. And so one day he decided that this has just run its course. It's enough.
Yeah.
We weren't making one another happy. Mm-hmm. We were engaged. Somewhere in between that, we got engaged.
Yeah.
And I said yes, mm-hmm. even though deep down I knew that it wasn't the right thing for us.
Yeah.
But I said yes. I didn't have the strength to say no. I didn't have the strength to walk away or do anything different. Yeah. I went along with it, but I didn't. And my mum was so furious with me because I didn't do all the girly type of things. I didn't want to go and try on wedding dresses. I didn't want to plan a wedding. And she couldn't understand what was wrong with me. While she was excited and thinking, oh my gosh, my baby's getting married, I just wasn't there. And so one day, we didn't have an argument that day. Mm-hmm. He basically gave, I remember he gave me a kiss on the forehead and he left. And that was it.
Is it?
Yeah.
So he didn't say goodbye, this is it, I'm done, I'm finished. He just literally disappeared.
Yeah.
Have you seen him since?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have. This is going back some years. My son was probably not even 1 year yet. Mm-hmm. And I must state, for the sake of transparency, mm-hmm. that I have very little memories of the first year of my son's life. Mm-hmm. So the story probably sounds a little disjointed and as though there are chapters missing. And that's because I know that this trauma-based response that I have of this memory suppression means that there are certain things that I have not been able to access because it was so traumatic for me.
So have you been to counselling?
No.
No, why not?
At the time, I was terrified of doing that because I was scared that...
In your business.
No, do you know what? It wasn't even that. Yeah. It wasn't about me at all. Mm-hmm. It was the fear that by opening up to anyone and letting them know what was going on, that he would get in trouble. And I didn't want him to get in trouble.
Right. Okay.
And that's all it was.
So when do you decide now, okay, I need to change my life around. I've got two children. I'm a single mother. And I need to do better for myself. When did this MBA pop into your head?
The MBA is quite recent. I did my MBA in 2018. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, I remember I spent probably about, I don't know, how many days weeping and wailing in the dark. Mm-hmm. And then one day I just woke up and I said, it's enough now. Mm-hmm. And clearly no one was coming to my rescue. And if I was going to dig myself out of this hole, I had to do it by myself.
Yeah.
And so in my desperation, I began a journey of personal development. And I came across a quote that I will never forget. And it forms the basis of the work that I do today. And it's this: watch your thoughts, for they become your words. Watch your words, for they become your actions. Watch your actions, for they become your habits. Watch your habits, for they become your character. And watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. Mm-hmm. And in my desperation, I took that literally, Sonia. I said that by transforming the way that I think, mm-hmm. by transforming the things that I say to and about myself, I will be able to transform my life. Mm-hmm. And that is the journey that I began. Mm-hmm. And it was a painful journey. I had to get to know myself again. I had to build myself up again. I had to get used to putting myself first and recognizing that was not a selfish thing to do, but it was a necessity, because if I'm not okay, then my children can't be okay. And I can't claim to love my children as much as I do and not look after me too. So I began that journey to becoming the person who I am today. Mm-hmm. And this is why I look back on my journey. I don't despise it. I'm not angry. I'm not bitter. I don't hate, because I believe every single step was necessary for me to be the woman who I am today. And I'm not perfect, Sonia. Trust me, I'm not. But I quite like me. And so I'm proud of the woman that I've become in spite of the pain, in spite of the tears, in spite of the depression, in spite of the heartache. Yeah. I'm still standing and I'm able to, I prayed and I asked God to repurpose my pain. Yeah. I said, don't let these tears be in vain. Yeah. And I'm pleased to be able to be in a position where I can share my story and I can share the lessons that I've learned from my journey to be able to help someone else who may be drowning and not have anyone to reach out to.
Yeah, awesome. Look at you. Oh my God. Okay, so before the MBA, what came before the MBA then? Which degree did you do?
Okay, so I did a Bachelor of Science in Business Management, but it was a long gap. That was about 10 years ago. Okay. I did
after your partner left you, is that when you went off singing, or was that singing before that?
Singing was before that.
It's before that. Okay.
So I stopped the singing when baby number one came.
Came along, right, okay. So you went off to university to do your Bachelor's of Science in...
Yeah. Again, but that was, I did that prior to baby number one. Yeah, so I did
that. Can you tell me what you did after baby number two then, please? I'm trying to get it out of you, babes.
Gosh, I'm trying to remember even. After baby number two...
After he left you, what did you do?
I stayed at home. I stayed at home and looked after the kids. I wasn't doing much of anything at that point. I was building myself up. I would have been no good to anyone at that point.
Leveling up your mindset, yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah. I had to. I had been broken down so badly. I was building myself up. I engaged
in for the purpose of our listeners, right, who's been through similar circumstances to you, what kind of things did you do or what kind of literature did you read to change your mindset? Because it had to have started in there.
Absolutely, it did. Mm-hmm. So I started being intentional with the way that I was thinking.
Yeah.
And when I caught myself thinking those negative thoughts or running that negative, that terrible narrative that I'm not good enough and that I'm worthless, I would sometimes shout aloud, no. Mm-hmm. Like literally say out loud, no, I reject that, and replace it with something positive. Mm-hmm. I also went on to using affirmations on a daily basis. So I wrote,
oh my God, it's all over the place.
I wrote out a whole load of affirmations. I would tell myself every morning looking into the mirror that I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That I am blessed and I'm highly favored. That I am happy, that I am healthy. I am well, I am in my right mind, I am grateful for a supportive network, I'm building the business of my dreams, the career of my dreams.
Go, girl!
I'm living my best life, I'm becoming better and better every day in every way.
Oh my God! Do you listen to, I used to do that one all the time. Every day in every way, I am better in every way.
Yes.
Every day in every way, I am better in every way.
And Sonia, at the time when I was saying it, it was a lie because I was still broken.
That transformation was taking place. It was still
exactly
as little as it is.
That's it. Yes. Exactly.
And that's the power of positive thinking.
Yes.
You know? Yes. And even in the Bible, it says it, speak those things as though they are.
That's it.
Even if you're out there and you're listening to this and you think that you're no good, you're in the gutter, nobody wants you, that's a lie from the pit of hell. Yes, and if you don't change your thoughts, you can't expect other people to change it for you.
No, absolutely not. No one's coming to your rescue. Mm. You have to do it to yourself. Yes, we pray, of course. But then after we finish praying, we've got to start taking some action.
Exactly.
We have to do things differently.
Works, prayer without works.
Faith without works is dead.
There you go. Faith without works
is dead. We have to put it into practice. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly the journey that I went on. And then it wasn't enough to just be speaking these things. Yeah. I needed to act as though it was the case. Mm-hmm. And so now I was able to take action and start when people would ask me to speak and share my story, I would have to start by saying yes. I didn't have the confidence yet. Mm-hmm. And I was saying yes while I was trembling, while I was scared. Yeah. But by taking these actions, that was the only way to get through it.
Yeah.
That was like my therapy, was talking it out, talking to other people and sharing what I had been through with other people to try and help someone else. And that did so much for me also. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the things that I would do. Here's another thing that I did. I started using vision boards. I started to, you know, go into the practice of visualization and imagining what I wanted my life to be like. Mm-hmm. You know, I started to spend more time focusing on what I did want rather than what I didn't want. So for example, I rejected the notion that my children would be damned and would be condemned because they didn't have their father in their life like that. Mm-hmm. I was worried that if I spent too much time fearing this, that I would attract that negative energy into my life. So instead, I would be intentional about seeing my children happy, about visualizing the success that they would have. Mm-hmm. And honestly, right now, my children, they're crazy. They're the bubbliest, craziest people that you would ever meet. And so that's another thing that I would say to people.
Yeah.
You focus, like, you know, what is it? the more that whatever you focus on grows.
Oh, yeah. So yeah.
If you want
energy to, goes, focus.
This is it. Focus absolutely.
Goes. Well, focus so, goes, energy. Where focus goes, energy flows.
Energy flows. That's exactly it. Yeah. And so I would be encouraging people to focus on what you want. Mm-hmm. Focus on the things that you have that you are also grateful for. That was another thing that I did. I practiced the art of gratitude. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to complain.
Did you use the journal?
You know what? I didn't. I didn't journal. Okay. I didn't journal, but I would. I had my affirmations. Yeah. I would express my gratitude, and I would be thankful to God every day for something. Mm-hmm. You know, there were many things to complain about. Of course, I could find a million and one things to complain about, but that would just bring my energy and my vibe down. I was trying to be lifted. Yeah. And so I would have, you know, I'm today, thank you, God, I'm grateful for X, Y, Z. Every day I would challenge myself to find at least 10 things that I could be grateful for.
Oh my gosh, listen, if you are out there and you are listening to this now, even if you cannot find 10 things that you can be grateful for, you can find 5. Yeah. For the mere fact that you woke up this morning,
that's right,
in your body, you can see with your eyes, your hands are working. All those are things to be grateful for.
Yes.
But Naomi, I want to thank you very much for your story. And